Radio Prague News. Jiří Čunek has been elected leader of the Christian Democratic Party. Talks on a coalition government continue without the Green Party. And a fifth of Czechs believe that only men should have the privilege of higher education. The Christian Democratic Party, the fourth biggest party in the lower house, elected a new leadership at its party conference in Brno on Saturday. The party's new chairman is Senator Jiří Čunek, a politician whose name made headlines nationwide when, as mayor of Setín, he evicted several hundred Romani rent defaulters from the town centre in mid-October. A Roma organisation is pressing charges of racism against him, and some two dozen Romanis turned up to protest against his election outside the Brno Conference Hall. On the other hand, there are many who praise Senator Čunek for the decisive manner in which he dealt with rent defaulters, and observers say this may have helped him win a seat in the Senate. Senator Čunek has called for party reform, and his election to the post of chairman is expected to give the party a new direction. Talks on forming a new coalition government continue without the Green Party, which announced its decision to withdraw from the talks on Friday because their programme priorities were allegedly not being taken into account. According to a press report released by the Social Democrats, the three remaining parties, that is the Civic Democrats, the Social Democrats and the Greens, are now discussing reforms in the areas of healthcare and security. Meanwhile, there's been speculation as to the position of Jiří Paroubek, leader of the Social Democrats, following Thursday's announcement that another party deputy wanted to leave the deputies group in Parliament. This would undermine the party's position in government talks. In recent weeks, there have been signals that the party is divided over whether it should go into the opposition or fight for a place in government. There has even been speculation that the former party boss, Miloš Zeman, who is no longer active in politics, has been trying to organise a putsch against the current Social Democrat leader. Mr. Zeman has rejected the idea as nonsensical. A fifth of Czechs believe that only men should have the privilege of higher education. A poll conducted by the CVVM agency indicates that 18% of Czechs, mainly older people, still believe in the male-female division of labour, according to which the man is the breadwinner and the woman's place is in the home. Despite this surprising outcome, the number of women graduating from Czech universities is on par with that of male graduates, and the vast majority of Czech women work. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine, Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our regular Saturday program. For details of precise times and frequencies, send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section 10099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or visit our website at www.radio.cz/English.
Welcome to Insight Central Europe, bringing you stories from Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia, and the Czech Republic. I'm Kerry Skyring, and this week, first the Iron Curtain, now the passport check. The borders keep coming down as Central Europe gets the go-ahead to join Schengen. Hungarians are asking, why do some of their citizens want asylum in Sweden? And the shocking story of a serial killer in Bohemia. These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe. But first, here's Dita Asiedu with the news.
Thank you, Kerry. In Poland, a political sex scandal took another turn this week when a woman, who accuses politicians from the populist Self-Defense Party of sexual abuse, claimed that one of the MPs is the father of her child and demanded child alimony. In newspaper interviews, the woman said she had to perform sexual favors for party leaders, including Deputy Prime Minister Andrei Leper. He denies the allegations, but he says he will have a serious talk to the MP accused of fathering the woman's child, Stanislav Lisvinsky. The Prime Minister, Jaroslav Kaczynski, has also become involved, saying in a radio interview that he could not imagine further cooperation with Andrei Leper if the accusations are confirmed. Attempts to form a four-party coalition government in the Czech Republic suffered a blow this week when the Greens withdrew from coalition talks. Greens chairman Martin Bursík said his party's priorities had not been included in the draft program, and he disagreed with the cabinet governing for the entire four-year term. The Greens want to return to a three-party coalition project with the Civic Democrats and the Christian Democrats. Together, they hold half of the mandates in the 200-seat Chamber of Deputies. Slovenia's Defence Minister Kar Erjavec arrived in Kosovo on Friday to meet Slovenian soldiers taking part in the NATO-led KFOR peacekeeping mission. Slovenia currently has 214 soldiers in Kosovo, but the contingent will be increased to over 700 early next year. Erjavec visited soldiers stationed in Pristina and met the KFOR deputy commander, Major General Roberto Bernardini. Two Slovak soldiers serving in Iraq are being sent home after becoming drunk. The chief of staff of the Slovak army, General Lubomir Bulík, says the two will be withdrawn to Slovakia immediately. Slovak soldiers serving abroad are not allowed alcohol, even in their spare time. Slovakia has a 100-strong contingent of military engineers and a guard unit stationed in Iraq. They are preparing to return home in March of next year. And Hungarians bid farewell to soccer legend Ferenc Puskás in Budapest on Saturday. The man, described as the best-known Hungarian of the 20th century, was buried with full state honors on a day which the government declared a national day of mourning. Puskás died on November 17th after a long illness. He scored a remarkable 83 goals in 84 international matches between 1945 and 1956, when the Hungarian squad was known as the Golden Team. He later became an accomplished football coach.
Thanks, Dieter. The decision this week to open up Central Europe to border-free travel, what the European Union calls the Schengen Zone, has been welcomed across the region. Now, this decision means that citizens of Poland, Slovakia, Slovenia, Hungary, the Czech Republic and other new EU members, by the end of the year, will no longer suffer border checks and airport controls as they travel within the EU, or at least most of it. Britain and Ireland are not in the Schengen Zone. From Radio Prague, Daniela Lazarova has this report on what it means for Czechs.
For months now, the Czech Republic and eight other EU newcomers had been battling against a proposed one-year delay of Schengen's expansion. Tuesday's compromise solution was seen as a historic decision by the Czech negotiating team in Brussels. Interior Minister Ivan Lange had this to say.
Evropa přestane být rozdělena na dvě části, na země a občany první a druhé kategorie.
Europe will no longer be divided into two categories of states, two categories of people. The citizens of the Czech Republic will share not only the duties but also the rights and freedoms of EU membership.
The Czech Republic's inclusion in the Schengen border-free zone will bring many benefits, among them better conditions for Czech businesses whose trucks now spend hours stranded at various border checkpoints and no congestion of traffic for passenger cars. It will also mean that Czech border guards can now be deployed elsewhere, filling other posts and saving taxpayers' money. But first and foremost, it will benefit Czech citizens who will finally be able to get the full benefits of free travel within the European Union. Political analyst Jiří Pehe.
The Czech Republic was 17 years ago one of the most oppressive countries in the world, surrounded by guard towers and barbed wire. And in 2008, it will be one of the two countries in the European Union which will have no external borders to guard because it is surrounded by EU members and it has no coast and doesn't border any non-EU countries. So this will be really, even symbolically, a huge change in comparison with 1989.
So how do Czechs themselves feel about the prospect of travelling freely within the European Union? I spoke to people in the streets of Prague earlier today, and I found that most of them had heard the news and welcomed it.
I was glad to hear it, despite the 3 months' delay. This is finally something positive for us.
Yes, I travelled to Italy when they had lifted border controls with Austria, and it was a very pleasant experience.
I'll be very pleased when it comes about. I own a travel agency, and this will make things so much easier for our clients.
No, tak na jednu stranu to určitě je.
It will be an improvement for all law-abiding citizens. On the other hand, I am a little worried about criminals and such. It will mean a greater risk because it will leave the country more open and vulnerable.
What some Czechs think of the prospect of border-free travel within the EU. In other reactions from Central Europe, Hungarian Justice Minister Jozef Petrutai called the decision the first major and joint success of the new member states. Slovenia's Interior Minister Dragutin Mate said his country was very well prepared and already securing its external EU borders up to Schengen standards. Poland's Interior Minister Ludwig Dorn said Poles and other EU newcomers will now feel like full-fledged EU citizens. And Slovakia's Prime Minister Robert Fico rejected suggestions from some quarters that his country may not be ready to join Schengen. And staying in Slovakia, local elections were held last week, with voters choosing their mayors and members of local councils. And the biggest surprise was the defeat of the incumbent mayor of Žilina, the infamous leader of the Slovak National Party, Jan Slaughter. Anka Dragu reports from Bratislava.
After spending 16 years in the mayoral chair, Slota, who is well known for his xenophobic remarks, had to concede to Ivan Harman, who was supported by a coalition of opposition parties. Here is what the new mayor had to say after the official results were made public. First of all, I will order an audit at the town hall because I have the feeling that the previous mayor abused his position and took decisions which were not favorable to the people of Žilina, said Harman. Political analyst Grigory Mesežnikov thinks that Slota lost because his governing was accompanied not only by moves that attested to his managerial abilities, but also by a great deal of suspicion concerning the transparency of decision-making.
The result of local elections in Žilina will have a nationwide impact, especially in terms of the future performance of the Slovak National Party, which is a member of the current governing coalition. They simply lost their stronghold, said Mesežnikov. All in all, leaders of the largest political parties in Slovakia have competed in announcing the success of their own political organization. Prime Minister Robert Fico said that the winner of Saturday's local elections was his own Smer SD party. This party is now strongly embedded in towns and villages. It's easier to defend the post of mayor than to defeat an incumbent, and that it is only this year that Smer has been able to take a significant impression in local elections. The strongest opposition party, SDKUDS, is also satisfied with the results of Saturday's local elections, according to party leader and former Prime Minister Mikuláš Zurinda. In some towns we have had better results, in others worse results than in 2002. But the overall evaluation is that we are satisfied with the result. Prime Minister Robert Fico's claim that his Smer party won the local elections is a nonsense and a lie. I don't think any political party in Slovakia can say it is the absolute winner. The SDKU's candidates won in the two largest cities in Slovakia, with Andrej Durkovsky re-elected as mayor of Bratislava and František Knapik in Košice. Analysts, however, concluded that it is difficult to measure the success of individual parties due to the various coalitions formed in towns and villages.
Anka Dragu reporting. Hungarians have been shocked to learn that some of their citizens are seeking asylum in Sweden. Over 350 Roma Hungarians sought asylum in Sweden. Most were sent back. Those trying to leave were mainly from Mohács, near Hungary's southern border with Croatia. Andrea Zobelitz is a spokeswoman for the UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR. She's been to southern Hungary to find out why so many are trying to leave. She spoke to Georgi Jakobi of Radio Budapest.
Mainly their reasons for seeking asylum in Sweden were extreme poverty and the fact that they feel totally excluded from the labor market, they don't have any chances, they say, to get jobs. They simply felt that they need to go abroad if they want to have a better life or a life at all.
Do you think that this situation is unique or worse than generally in Hungary?
From the information I found there in Mohács, I know that not only in the southern region of Hungary, but also in other regions, a number of Roma are already planning to go abroad. And also the Roma leaders I met in Mohács confirmed that they are aware of other families planning to travel abroad and seek asylum.
However, Sweden expels the latecomers on legal grounds that both Hungary and Sweden are members of the European Union.
The Swedish authorities, when they examined their asylum claims, have come to the conclusion that these Roma are not persecuted in Hungary, they are not in danger, and therefore they are not in need of refugee status in Sweden.
Had they asked for work possibilities, would they then have a right to stay?
First they tried to seek asylum, but I was informed by many of them who were returned to Hungary that later on they would like to go again, and this time not as asylum seekers, but as legal labor migrants. But of course, that possibility is a bit more difficult, because if they want to seek a job in Sweden, they can do so as any other EU citizen, but they have to be able to support themselves.
Andrea Zubelitz, a spokeswoman for the United Nations Refugee Agency, the UNHCR. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Insight Central Europe is a co-production from Radio Polonia, Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, and Radio Slovenia International. It was a news report that sent shivers down people's spines. Since last May, a 30-year-old nurse has killed 8 people and attempted to kill at least 9 more at a hospital in eastern Bohemia. There's no indication the motive was euthanasia. None of the people killed were suffering from a terminal illness, and they were all expected to recover. Radio Prague's Dieter Asiedu reports.
When 30-year-old Petr Zelenka started work at the Havličku Broad Hospital as a nurse over 6 years ago, he seemed like the ideal employee. Devoted, enthusiastic, and willing to work overtime whenever needed. In his spare time, he studied to improve his knowledge of medicine, particularly his knowledge of pharmaceuticals. But when in May of this year he was promoted to head nurse on night shifts, he started applying his knowledge in practice. On nights when he was in charge, the entire intensive care unit was in his hands, and he started injecting his victims with heparin, a blood-thinning drug causing internal bleeding when administered in large doses. Milan Juška, who heads the investigation, told the media he was certain that the nurse had not been acting as an angel of mercy.
This has nothing to do with euthanasia. This was carefully planned, premeditated murder.
The hospital's head physician, Pavel Longin, says that the higher number of cases in which patients died as a result of internal hemorrhaging alerted him to the fact that something was wrong.
We were investigating individual cases and ascertaining who was on duty at the time. My initial suspicion was that it might be 2 or 3 nurses who were new and inexperienced and possibly prone to making mistakes. I thought we would have to watch them very carefully, but instead we found that Nurse Zelenka figured in every single case, and that was definitely very suspect.
The hospital sacked Zelenka in September and reported the incident to the police almost a month later. The nurse, who had in the meantime begun work at a hospital in a different Czech town, in Jihlava, was arrested on December the 1st. There's no indication that he had managed to commit any murders at his new workplace. Many are questioning how the perpetrator was able to get away with it the long 4 months. Why did it take so long for the hospital and the police to act? The hospital's director has since been sacked, and an investigation is underway to assess whether the police could have sped up the arrest. But one thing is not yet clear: the motive. Zelenka's lawyer has been quoted as saying the nurse may have killed on an impulse to test doctors in the belief they were not good enough to discover the truth. With 8 murders and at least 9 attempted murders to his name, Zelenka could face anything between 15 years in prison and a life sentence. This is one area where the suspect has shown emotion. Surprise that in the end, he was caught. For Inside Central Europe, this is Dieter Asiedu in Prague.
Slovenes have been debating state funding for abortions after a government minister suggested that funding should be stopped as part of a plan to lift birth rates. Well, the suggestion has cost the Labour minister, Janez Drobnic, his job. But the debate goes on. Slovenes, it seems, are very attached to the idea of easy access to abortion. Radio Slovenia International's Ksenija Samardzija-Matul reports.
The opposition parties blasted the latest strategy of the Labour Ministry to increase the birth rate, in particular the proposal to tighten abortion policy. Such a position interferes with acquired rights and runs contrary to the Constitution, the Liberal Democrats LDS said. The LDS also points out that Article 55 of the Constitution says that everyone shall be free to decide whether to bear children. According to a poll, this idea is supported by the majority of citizens. Roughly 80% of respondents said that abortion was a woman's right to decide over her own body, while only 14% believed that abortion is an inadmissible intervention into the life of a human being. My colleague Chris Verry spoke to Dr. Vojko Flis, the former president of the Ethical and Medical Committee in Slovenia, about the ethical problems of Drobnic's suggestion.
The experience in Slovenia has shown that when there is an open access to abortion and simultaneously, what is very important, very different strategies are applied, then the rate of abortion will decline steeply. And then that situation we have seen till now in Slovenia. But behind all this discussion, although ailments it may sound ridiculously in 21st century, we have to respect the women as their personality. So we cannot go into this question with much conflict, with great hard talk and so on. And we don't like in Slovenia to get in a past in such archaic society as was, for example, Ceausescu's Romania, when abortion was forbidden.
In most societies, the medical profession has to make choices between life and death. Indeed, the quality of life or even the cost of treatment becomes part of that argument. Why is abortion so different?
It is not different, but it tackles a very complex and, delicate field of human feelings, human emotions. And women may have, and they had in this discussion in Slovenia, which we have had in at the present time, they may have the feeling that this is an attack, an open attack to their personality. And they may have a feeling that they should take care of their children, they should take care of pregnancy, but they have nothing to say about abortion. And that's the problem. So in part of these complex questions are feelings and emotions of women. Is the question, do we respect them as persons or do we not? And all society is feeling it would be a step back when we put restrictions to women when we are talking about abortion.
Dr. Vojko Flis, a former president of the Medical Ethics Committee in Slovenia, ending that report from Radio Slovenia International. Poland's Christian Zimmermann is one of the greatest living pianists. He turned 50 last week, and while Poles wished him well, they would like to see some more of him. Here's Michał Kubicki in Warsaw.
When Zimmermann entered the Warsaw Chopin competition in 1975, he was an unknown 19-year-old, the youngest of all participants. Having won first prize and almost all the special awards, he overnight became one of the best-known personalities in Poland. He was already then a mature virtuoso, with an incredible technique and a deep insight into the problems of interpretation. Today, Christian Zimmermann is among the most sought-after pianists in the world. Music critic Kacper Miklaszewski describes him as a true perfectionist.
He's close to perfection, in every of his performance, if he is not perfect, he still seeks, goes, or tries to be perfect. He's looking for some perfect sounding of any music he plays.
Recent highlights in his career included the worldwide tour with the Polish Festival Orchestra, which he himself founded, and with which he performed both Chopin concertos, conducting from the keyboard. That was 7 years ago. Since then, Zimmermann has not performed in Poland. Music critic Andrzej Sułek explains why.
I think the problem is not just logistic of his concert. He's a person of a very strict view on his art meant as a whole. I mean, not only what he performs on the stage, not only how the piano sounds. He tries to build special atmosphere around his music, around what he creates. I suppose that he's always afraid of Polish audience and of Polish critics, and it's the main reason he doesn't like to play in Poland.
Christian Zimmermann lives with his wife and two children in Switzerland. He divides his time between his family, concerts, recording sessions, and teaching. Polish music lovers are hoping that he'll soon include his native Poland on his itinerary. I'm Michał Kubicki in Warsaw for Insight Central Europe.
Thanks, Michael. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again or find out more about the Insight Central Europe team, check out our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Radio Polonia, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague and Radio Slovenia International. I'm Kerry Skyring. Join me and the rest of the team next week. Thank you.